has passed. That's all right. You know
what? I blame myself.
We were running a little bit. I was running a little bit behind, too. We actually went out to dinner tonight.
Oh, my God. What?
Yeah.
Look at this guy living the privileged life.
Hey, yeah. Get that sweet, sweet Pfizer juice running through my veins. And
I'm halfway there on the Pfizer juice myself. Two and a half more weeks, and I will be, I assume, a superhero.
Nice. So you still need your second?
Yeah, I got my first shot last Saturday.
Okay, cool. Yeah, so you're just getting ramped up.
I'll get my second on Friday.
Very nice.
And then, like, something almost resembling public life can begin to sort of resume.
Yeah.
I'm traveling a lot.
And setting up parties, from what I can see. Many and varied.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yep. I'm excited for that pool party, man.
Yeah. Yeah, that should be good. Good times. Yep. All right, well, it's exciting talk here. Now, especially that we're live.
Well, here's the deal, Tony. This is how I feel about this movie.
Already. Yeah, this is the meta conversation for this movie. Is that what's... Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I was wondering how much conversation there was actually going to be about it.
You know what? Let's just go ahead and get started.
Why don't we?
Let's do that.
Hey, this is Tony.
This is David.
And this is Eric.
Oh, I guess I didn't get the...
Yeah, you fucked up
things set up correctly.
Does David always go last? Is that like a thing?
Yeah, that's
generally because like when we sit at the table, like normally we sat
there.
And we better. Go around.
Would you feel better if we did it again?
No.
You sure?
Mm-hmm. I'm past that part of my life.
Yeah, I don't even remember. We're the backseat producers. I don't remember if we said that. I don't think I did, but we are. That's what we're doing.
And very high energy tonight, clearly.
Yeah. Wow. I'm actually wearing my backseat producers.
Wow, look at you. Tonight. Thematically appropriate.
I am wearing my mercenary company BattleTech hat and my Locust battle mech shirt. So
that hat, I knew it wasn't, but like for a minute there when I first signed you on it, it almost looked like the Operation Mindcrime logo.
I don't know what that is.
I don't know what that is either. Oh, is that the
Queensryche album?
There it is. Damn it.
Yeah.
Okay. Digging deep into the old man legacy.
Yeah, I just listened to Rage for Order the other day.
Given the intensely 80s roots of BattleTech, honestly, it's not that far of a stretch.
Yeah, I can imagine there's probably some crossover in the fandoms.
All of the like original, like the first decade of artwork for the game it's basically 80s porn, 80s metal porn. Also, it's all very bad. Much of it clearly traced, but what are you going to do? Lots of teeth. People smile with their teeth a lot in the old art. It's a little creepy. So we're all thematically appropriate.
Mm-hmm. David's
just wearing black because he's mourning.
Mourning what?
Excitement?
you sounded like you regretted the time spent on watching this movie.
Well, I did.
So, full disclosure, when we decided to do this movie, it was based on a recommendation.
Oh.
Of a host that is not here tonight.
God damn it, Lena.
Yeah. She's like, oh, yeah, I watched that movie. It was pretty good. This was after my parents had watched it, and they're like, that movie was terrible. It was, yeah, yeah. They're like, I don't think they made it. I want to say they made it like 20 minutes in.
Oof.
And they're like, this movie's really dull. This is really boring. I was like, all right, well, that happens. So these were the two touch points I had before I decided to add this one to the queue because it's also on the Oscar list.
And it is very obvious why it is on the Oscar list.
It is kind of the definition of Oscar bait.
But I'm going to go ahead and offer my high level review first. Do it. Eric asked about our 2/3 rule for Netflix movies. This one nailed it.
This movie,
it followed the rule, the 2/3 rule for Netflix movies. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was so bored watching this movie. It was just dull. That's my high level overview.
I will admit I actually broke up the viewing of this movie into several pieces because I couldn't sit still long enough to watch it all the way through.
That tracks.
And I should probably also lead with the confession that I'm a bad movie watcher, because not because I couldn't sit through it, but because I have never actually seen Citizen Kane.
I haven't seen Citizen Kane either.
Oh well, then I don't feel so bad.
I have, but I mean, and while this movie was ostensibly about the time period when Citizen Kane was made, nothing to do with Citizen Kane.
Yeah. So, and that's, I mean, I have absorbed through existing in the world enough about Citizen Kane to get the context for the film, right?
Yeah.
I feel about Ghostbusters.
But you know what? There's a whole lot more to absorb about Ghostbusters and in pop culture than there is about Citizen Kane.
At this point, anyway. Yeah.
Yeah.
My high level take on it, aside from not being able to sit through it in one sitting, was basically once I kind of got past the, okay, this is really just going to be a movie about stuff I don't care about. It was, I thought, shot really well. Like, it was enjoyable for me to experience because it did a nice job of kind of trying to look and feel like an old, you know, movie of the era of the 30s and 40s with the music and the cuts and, you know, the framing and everything. But yeah, the story, I couldn't even really tell, like, what is really the point here other than just kind of framing this historical context. And it occurs to me, is it me or does Netflix really have an obsession with American period pieces of the 20th century? Because, like, the last three films we've talked about have all been that. Maybe four.
Might be four.
I think it's four. Yeah. that seemed to be their go-to for this period when they were making films or purchasing them. Because I know sometimes Netflix purchases the distribution of a film after it's made. I don't know if that was the case for this one or not.
I struggled through this movie. The time period is not interesting to me in the slightest, and all of the 30s and 40s affected, like, style, I could have done without all of that. Like, the thing is, like, with a flashback story, the title cards make it worse. Like, if you're gonna jump around, the title cards make it impossible to follow. Because, like, I don't remember what year things are when it spans multiple years. Right? Like, I don't remember 5 minutes ago when you showed the last title card with a month and a year on it. Like, that's too much. You need better clues. So.
Yeah. Thanks, Art. I kind of felt that, like, you could tell, obviously, the title cards were part of the pastiche of it's a movie about Hollywood, about making movies, right? But, like, there have been so many movies, I mean, And Citizen Kane was, like, one of the first ones to ever do the whole jumping around in time thing, which is part of the point of why they did it here. But lately, especially, there have been so many movies that play with perspective and changing time frames and rely on the audience to pick up on the contextual clues to realize when they are at any given moment, that it just felt lazy and harder by having them feed it to you like that.
Yep. Well, there was also no context clues.
Yeah.
So they had to. Like, there was
a broken leg or not.
Right. Yeah. That was it. That was it. The context. There was, you know, is he drunk in bed or is he drunk walking around?
That's the thing, man. Listen, Gary Oldman's an incredibly talented actor. And he's very good in this, except it's the rest of this movie.
There's just nothing for him to do in it.
Mm-hmm. The dialogue is very well written, and he delivers it very well.
But yeah.
Also, so, it is boring.
So the two thirds are Gary Oldman is one third. The dialogue, and I'm going to go the cinematography is another third, because I think they succeeded in what they were trying to do with the cinematography, which was make everything look old and dull.
They succeeded.
They did.
Spectacularly.
And then the one third where they failed is to have a story that was engaging. When you're telling a story with Gary Oldman about a famous actor with other famous people circling them, about a movie that's arguably at the top of, it's not arguably, it is at the top of most people's list, and most of the big lists of one of the greatest films ever made. And it follows the rise of socialism in Hollywood and how it affected people getting blackballed and not, and working and not, and, you know, like the politics around Upton Sinclair. Like, there's so many things there that should have made a compelling story. And anytime it got remotely interesting, it was time for a cut.
Yeah.
Like we're going to tease being interesting, and then we're just going to leave that and do something else that's just that I don't care about.
Yeah. Yeah. Like one of the few times I can remember being engaged with the movie, like really emotionally invested in the movie, was the scenes leading up to the propaganda director's suicide.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And like there's the flash of the gun in the window, and bam, cut to present day. We're not even going to talk about it. And the next time we cut to a flashback, we're at a funeral that's not even his funeral. It's some other guy's funeral months and months later. And it's just like, okay, so we've just moved past that. Yeah. So yeah, there was a weird lack of emotional payoff from any of the stuff that happened.
Yeah.
And the thing was, is there was plenty of things there that could have had emotional payoff. Like they led you right to that point, but like anytime that you got to the point of feeling anything, we're just gonna let that die on the vine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I did afterwards. I did a little bit of internet research, for what it's worth, which is basically just scanning Wikipedia articles, right? And but about the subject matter, because it's not stuff I was particularly familiar with, and I having been caught on some of the other period piece movies we've watched, I know, you know, they will take liberties and such. So I was curious, you know, how much of this is purely fictionalized, how much of it is based on real stuff. And there's a lot, I mean, there's a lot of grist there. But I feel like when we got to the end, a bunch of the major conflicts, right? So Mankiewicz versus Hearst, Mankiewicz's complicated relationship with his wife, his complicated relationship with Hearst's wife, his relationships with the studio, all that stuff. When you got to the concluding scenes of the movie, none of that mattered. It was all about Mankiewicz wanting credit for the script, which it turns out, as I did my research, apparently for certain types of film nerds and Hollywood types, that was a huge story for decades. Like, it was a massive, there was scandals and there was he said, she said, and all kinds of stuff going on with that. But like, they barely set any of that up as the conflict of the film. So if you aren't a giant film nerd and know about all that, the payoff, I felt like, wait, why is this what we're caring about at the end?
Yeah, welcome to the Hollywood, welcome to the Oscar bait.
Hmm. Yeah, it almost felt like, I mean, if they were really going to make this movie for that, there should have been another time period, and one that broke the convention of being in black and white. Do it sometime later, the 60s, the 70s, some later time when people are researching and trying to resolve this and get to a point where I'm assuming at some point it was resolved. I mean, I don't know, because I didn't bother to research it, to be honest. But so let's follow those people and then like use them as the bookends. Framing. Yeah, as the framing. Kind of like I'm thinking of like Titanic did.
Mm.
you know, because you had the stuff that was very clearly in the present day, and then we're going to go back and tell the story. And they're going to use that to remind you of what's important, what's going on, the story we're actually telling.
Yeah, the emotional connection in the bookends of why we're doing this.
Yeah, and actually there was a perfect opportunity for that from what I read. Apparently there was, like, I don't know, a decade or two after the events of the film, there was a biographical researcher who did a whole series of interviews with Orson Welles's guy that he had checking in on Mank while he was recovering. That guy, I can't remember the character's name now. But that guy apparently completely flipped on Welles after the events of this movie. Like, he swore Welles had nothing to do with the script. He didn't even write a word of it. It was all Mank. And Welles later said that the only enemy he's ever had in life was that guy.
Yeah, that seems like a real easy, like, that seems like a really easy way to tell this story. Have that guy as an old man
telling his story. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, interviewed with some other cameo actor that's moderately well known, you know, like the Bill Paxton character. and then, you know, then you cut back to him as a young man checking in on Mank and working as a go-between between him and Orson Welles. Like, that easily would have been a more engaging story and would have been easier to follow.
Yeah, if you set up the frame at the beginning that this ultimately is a story about who wrote Citizen Kane, which they, again, if you would know, if you know, if you're a nerd to know the history of this stuff, but otherwise they don't establish that at all.
Yep. The work did not stand alone in telling us that.
No.
Yeah, I didn't even know that was a conflict. I just assumed.
Honestly, I didn't either.
Yeah. You remember last week when we were talking about how Netflix's, like, historical dramas set in the civil rights struggle 60s are, like, a super fascinating time period to me? This is the opposite of that. I do not give a shit about Hollywood, and particularly in this time period. Like, I just could not muster the energy to give a shit about this.
30s Hollywood doesn't speak to you.
It doesn't. Even though, like, that room that that dude kills himself in, that clearly looks like a shot out of Who Framed Roger Rabbit. Like,
which is the best thing to come out of the 30s in Hollywood, right? I mean,
it is.
Yeah,
but the dialogue was so goddamn good. Ugh, God, everything Mank says was so pretty.
It was. The dialogue was good. The dialogue is probably the only thing that kept me watching the movie. And not just calling an audible and saying, we're not going to talk about this. If you guys haven't seen it yet, let's talk about something different.
Just talk about literally anything else.
Yeah. But then I got to the point where it was like, God damn it, I sat through this. Somebody else needs to also.
It's fair.
So I drug you guys along for the ride.
So I normally turn it on while I'm watching, and then, like, I can gauge how good the movie is by how much work I get done. I got a lot of work done today.
Yeah.
I think, honestly, and even the movie seemed to recognize that the dialogue was the one place it was strong, because one of the lines that really stuck with me was after Mank goes on his drunken rant that basically tanks his career near the end of the film, and Meyer says, Hearst likes you because of how you talk, not because of how you write, because of how you talk. And I was like, well, that's this whole movie.
Yeah, you're right. I do recall that line explicitly. And even the whole thing with Hearst, like, I know the backstory of Citizen Kane, and that the idea that it was about Hearst. Like, that's the common belief was that Kane from the movie was Hearst.
A pseudo biography.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a fanciful biography of the time the person was still alive. But, like, even that, even knowing that, it wasn't engaging in terms of knowing that this is the character this is the man that character is based on. It just didn't matter.
Yeah. Even though he was Tywin Lannister.
Yeah. Yeah. I was like, oh man, Charles Dance is in this. I like him.
Yeah, no, he's really good. Oh, except he's in this movie.
And he was barely a role in it too. He had like one scene where he spoke.
Mm-hmm. The rest of the time he just looked like Charles Dance, which, you know, honestly, he's got a very good stare.
I almost feel like this would have made a more interesting stage play given one big strong lead like Gary Oldman, mm-hmm. and almost being a one man show.
Oh, Tony, one man shows are exhausting.
No, I didn't say I wanted to see it as a one man show, but just have it like three quarters of the show being that one guy, like everything is riding on that person. This movie was only moderately watchable because of him, though, because of Gary Oldman. Anybody else, and that'd have been a turning it off after 15 minutes.
Yeah. They shot this entire movie black and white, and they did not shoot a color version of this movie.
Really?
No color version of this movie exists.
Huh.
The cameras they use are only black and white.
Well, that saves money for them.
Well, and I think there's... I've seen some stuff about like black and white versus color, and like it looks different if you shoot something in black and white versus shoot something and then make it black and white. The shadows look
different. Yeah. But I think that's just a good representation of the rest of the movie. This overindulgent, like just fucking pretentious ass. Way to
a slow
it.
Jerk of Hollywood.
Yeah, it's like, film. It's like, oh, fucking come on, guys. We're not writing Citizen Kane here.
Oh, wait.
Yeah, damn, Gary Oldman is good, though. Like,
he is.
To the point where, once again, and he does this in a lot of movies, too. Like, it was one of those where I would have to stop for a second. Wait, that's Gary Oldman. Like
that's fucking Gary Oldman, yeah.
Forget because he becomes these characters.
Oh, is that fucking Zorg from Fifth Element? God damn, Commissioner Gordon, get it.
Now, see, if Batman had dropped into the movie like in the middle of the film, that would have been better.
It would have been real black and white. I don't think it's probably a good look for Batman.
Oh, I disagree. I think you can do some good, you know, dark versus light type.
Only would have approved of seeing Michael Keaton as Batman in this movie, though.
I mean, obviously, Adam West is dead, right? Because I could live with Adam West, but
I would have also accepted Kevin Conroy. What the fuck? Conroy, is that the guy's
Kevin
name?
Kevin Conroy.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, I would have accepted him.
Yeah,
just for the voice. Especially with the black and white, like you can do a lot of good stuff with shadow.
And his face is all kinds of craggly now too. He showed up in the
Crisis on Infinite Earths thing they did for the DC TV shows.
yeah.
He played like old man Batman from like Batman Beyond-esque era.
Yeah, and like a bitter, dark, twisted version of it, and it was like. All right, this is actually kind of fun.
Those shows are not good, but they seem to often have a good grasp of enjoying what they're doing, at least.
Yeah. The whole Crisis crossover thing was a terrible story, but the cameos were a lot of fun. Like it was fun, but a supercut of the cameos would have been enough. Like, because they were announcing all those cameos, and Holden just kept getting more and more excited. I'm like, buddy, you don't know what you're getting excited about yet, because this is not going to be.
You're going to pay for
anything
it.
Measurable.
You're going to pay for it. Yeah, I don't like the thing is about this movie that there's like there's nothing compelling about it to talk about. Like the narrative is simple, which is why they had to do this ridiculous film shooting thing to make it seem like it's a more complicated narrative. But again, there's no central conflict.
No,
there's never a conflict that's presented. Like you at some point in the middle of the movie learn that Hearst and Mank had a falling out. You don't know exactly what it is. And then when you learn what it is, there's nothing super compelling about it either. Like, the propaganda thing could have been interesting, but there's literally no reason that Mank is interested in it whatsoever.
It was only to drive a narrative through line for the movie when there wasn't one otherwise. There was nothing to follow because it was a dude getting drunk in a cabin writing a movie.
Yep.
Yeah, and I mean, if you're going to set up the conflict as being, you know, does Mank grow a conscience and decide to take a stand about his beliefs? And, well, he already blacklisted himself in Hollywood. We pretty much figure that out from the get-go. So, and I guess they keep sending people over to tell him not to do the movie. But, like, there's never any point at which I think, oh, yeah, he might actually just decide that he doesn't want to do this. No, he clearly doesn't give a crap. He's going to do the movie. Mm-hmm. So that can't be the conflict.
Yeah, and then I also thought there was going to be a conflict with, oh, no, we're running out of time. Nope, it's just at one point, it's 2 weeks before the deadline, and the next thing we know, it's
here
finished.
It is. Here yeah. It is.
I sent off the first draft. Okay, was it late? Or was it on, like, what? When are we?
Right. Yeah. I got nothing else. Honestly, I've stretched to say as much as I have about it. I would have been far more interested to learn about Upton Sinclair and his political aspirations, and because I had honestly had no knowledge of that.
Yeah, me neither. And I thought he lived in Chicago. I thought his expose on the meatpacking industry was like the Chicago meat situation.
The Jungle was about Chicago. Yeah.
Right.
But from what it sounded like, there were a lot of people who were moving to California from all over places in the country. So I don't know if he was originally from California or if he just moved there to run for governor because he felt like it was a good, you know, atmosphere for it. And that's the thing. Yeah, they... Like, the Upton Sinclair thing was a side story, or it was meant to be context, but they didn't give you any context.
Yep.
So, and again, if you're not a history nerd.
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, like, and I knew who he, like, generally who he was before this, but, like, would have gotten zero context from the movie. And now that I'm thinking back on Mank's entire motivation, dude, I seriously think the only reason that he gets involved with the political aspect of it whatsoever is that one dude asks him for $10 and he's like, I'm not giving you $10. And then he just carries this grudge through the rest of the fucking movie. Because the guy, he's like, I'm not giving you $10. And then they get into another argument later and he's like, man, if you even tried at anything, just imagine how much stuff you could accomplish. And he's like, fuck, I'm not giving you $10, dude.
Yeah.
And then he tries to dismantle his propaganda thing. So it's just like clearly this $10 spite motivation.
You've found the heart of the story.
You know what? If that would have been the motivation and they clear, like, if they really leaned into that, that would have made it more interesting. Great. That would have been more interesting.
And honestly, it would have been a better... Because clearly one of the things they were trying to do was mirror aspects of Citizen Kane itself with the story of how Citizen Kane got made, right? Mm-hmm. And, what you know, the big reveal in Citizen Kane, the ultimate of all spoilers, right, is that Rosebud, the thing Citizen Kane is obsessed with from the beginning of his movie, is his old childhood sled. That means it's ridiculous. It's almost silly how pathetic it is. So if there had been a reveal at the end that this was all about $10, that would have been the Rosebud of the film.
Yeah. It would have been, yeah. As opposed to a stupid one-liner about how they thought it was a body part of Hearst's wife or something.
Yeah.
Which from my minimal research is apparently true.
Or really?
It was the rumor at the time. Yeah.
Well, that makes, I mean, it makes sense not knowing what it was. just knowing that was part of the through line of the movie.
Mm-hmm. But yeah.
Yeah, I remember the first time I watched the movie, and I mean, this was all pre-internet. So it was like, oh, you have to really pay attention and watch for Rosebud because it's such a big part of it. And it's like, it's a big mystery. And I watched the movie and it was like, okay, the movie was really good. Like, they very clearly spell out at the end of the movie exactly what it is. Like, it's not, it's not this big secret Easter egg that you have to hunt for. It's right there.
But Tony, yeah. Is the top still spinning because he's in a balloon?
But it wobbled.
But it wobbled.
But then it kept going. We're gonna get Sam. We're gonna get Sam involved in this conversation if we keep that talk up.
Just summon him.
Yep. So I am so checked out of even the discussion of this movie. I'm now looking because we haven't decided what we're going to do next week.
Oh yeah.
Next week is going to be the last chance we have to see, one of the Oscar movies before the Oscars.
Okay.
One of the best picture movies. So
nomination.
I'm looking and,
so let's see, you've done Mank, you've done Judas and the Black Messiah. Trial of Chicago 7.
And yeah, so the choices that we have are The Father, Minari, Nomadland, Promising Young Woman, and Sound of Metal.
So I know I have seen a ton of people talking Minari up a bunch, but I don't know if it's streamable anywhere.
It is streamable Minari. For rental or purchase it can be still be caught in theaters, or you can purchase a digital rental for $20.
$20?
Jeez.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's actually Plaza Frontenac tomorrow, 6:35.
Yep. Nomadland is apparently on Hulu.
And it's got Frances McDormand in it.
Yep. Promising Young Woman is available for rental, apparently for $6, but is also in theaters. Like the words revenge comedy, though, in this description. So there's that. And Sound of Metal is on Amazon Prime Video for free with Prime membership.
I am least interested in Sound of Metal. A heavy metal drummer's life is thrown into free fall when he begins to lose his hearing.
Yeah, I may just watch that one because I am actually interested in that.
That actually sounds pretty interesting to me.
But I like Riz Ahmed too.
Oscar bait really is a thing. I'm reading the description of Nomadland because I hadn't heard of that one. A woman in her 60s who, after losing everything in the Great Recession, embarks on a journey through the American West, living as a van-dwelling modern-day nomad. Huh. Okay.
You know, I think I want to watch the least likely of Oscar movies for this. And a revenge comedy sounds like that.
Yeah, I agree.
I think the hashtag Me Too part of it is the Oscar baity part of that. But revenge comedy is still a... Oh, and Laverne Cox is in it. And so is Clancy Brown.
And Alison Brie.
Well, you've got David sold.
All right, Promising Young Woman. We'll talk about that next week.
That one, you said that was like a $6 rental or whatever?
Yeah, it looks like
that's
it.
That's not bad.
That's not terrible. Also, I'm fully vaccinated, and I haven't been to a theater yet. God, I may just go out to Tony. A movie.
You are the worst.
Yeah, I am.
Jesus, just lording it over the rest of us now.
We've got that, and then the week after is Holden's performances. He is actually. Let me go ahead and talk that up, and I'll put a link in out there later for this. He is the lead. He's playing Gomez Adam in the Addams Family, the musical for his high school. This is going to be his final high school musical, and they're doing live stream performances of it the 23rd, 24th, 25th. And they're going to actually live stream the live performances where in the past they've done some stuff where they've recorded things and then just play a video. This is going to be a live stream of the performances. We're actually going to get to see him in the theaters.
So if he's playing Gomez, has he learned to tango?
He has. That was part of it.
Okay.
It's a quarantine edition of the musical, though. Like, it's specifically made so that they don't have to tango, like, touching each other. But they do a tango just around each other.
Yeah, they tango, but they're both in the hamster balls.
Yep. They actually, like, mention the quarantine. Like, he's like, yeah, normally we'd dance, but, you know, quarantine. Okay, apparently that's actually one of the lines of the show.
Art of a Thief's Life, Tony.
Yeah.
I appreciate the ripped from today's headlines.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's a way to use existing material and then just tweak it a little bit, but still have live theater. You know, those the kids have been starved for doing this. They actually had this was cast last year. So like the kids who were seniors last year, like they were a week or two away from performing when the world shut down. And so like they were like they had costumes fitted and everything, that the stage was built, and they just had to stop. So like there were kids cast in roles. Holden was in the ensemble, like
and from ensemble to Gomez.
Yeah. So all summer, like he was practicing the Gomez's songs and the accent, because he's like, God damn it, I want that role. And so yeah, he practiced like all summer long, and without even the guarantee that they were going to do it this year, and then they did. So he got the role.
Thanks, Obama.
Yeah. Yeah. So, we get some commentary here from Art. Two things. I'm three seasons into Letterkenny.
Lucky you.
Good job. And is that a Locust shirt?
to answer part two, yeah, it's a Locust shirt.
So Art, what do you think of Letterkenny? Just out of curiosity, I'll let you wait and get around to answer that. But yeah, so anybody who actually wants to watch, it's going to be available to stream the show, the 23rd, 24th, and 25th. And Art says he is loving it. Which I assumed if you're, you know, three seasons in and you've got plenty more to go. All right. So I'm done with my advertisement there.
You've plugged.
Yep.
I don't have anything to plug, Tony.
I'm childless, so I have nothing.
I'm also.
Except money.
Money, time, and sleep.
And time and sleep, yeah.
Had my first real life, to be fair. Yeah, Holden and I still do that if that comes up.
I don't even have anything interesting to talk about from the last week either. I don't know what the deal is, man, but I've just been falling asleep. Like every day after work has been like this 2-hour nap for me, and then I wake up and I'm like, God, I could just go back to sleep and sleep all night too.
Well, let's see. I tore through Afterlife. Really enjoyed that. Afterlife, yeah. It's a Ricky Gervais comedy. It's a comedy about a guy whose wife of 20 years dies of cancer.
Oh, funny and, stuff.
Yeah, funny stuff. And Ricky Gervais is allowed to be very Ricky Gervais because his wife is the one that died. And so he just has all of his fucks have just completely run out. And so he just can be as sarcastic and as cruel to as many people around him as he wants. And they all kind of give him a pass. But it's really fucking funny. And then the other night, Julie and I were watching TV upstairs because Aaron had a friend sleeping over and we just didn't want to be involved in all that. We were flipping channels around and ran across it's a Black Lady sketch show. That's the name of it. Okay. And it's on HBO. And I was unaware of this. And we, like, it just kind of came on, and the cold open was so funny that, like, we just kept watching the episode. And then it was like, man, this is a really funny show. So I went back and found it on HBO Max and watched all of that. It's only one season, 6 half-hour episodes. That was some pretty funny shit. It's pretty standard sketch comedy stuff, but it's all – there are four Black women who are like the leads, and then they have just a ton of cameos. Angela Bassett, Laverne Cox, people from the cast of 227 were in one of them. Like just a bunch, Garrett Morris was on one of them. Just a bunch of moderately famous Black actors. And I guess the second season starts in a couple of weeks, and I'm going to be in for it because I watched all of that in the last 2 days.
I'm rewatching Arrested Development.
How is that?
Taking this Jessica Walter death pretty hard.
How is the rewatch of that?
It's the same as always is.
I never watched the
fourth and fifth season on Netflix.
Which one was the one that I think I watched the fourth season? Was that the one where it was the like all out of like that the time sequence was all out of whack where it was all the same events but told from different perspectives?
Yeah, because they did one episode per character instead of the like serial storyline. Well, the thing is they actually went back and re-edited it.
Really?
Yeah, so they changed it from that format to sequential.
Did that work when they did that? Have you rewatched it since then?
I'm in the middle of it now, and it's all right.
Because I watched it the way it was originally done. I watched the fourth season. I never did watch the fifth season.
Mm-hmm. I've finished the fifth season before, and it's all right also. Also all right. But, you know, they lost the magic after those first three seasons. Once they lost Portia de Rossi's nose, could never go back.
That was kind of like that last season of Community. It was just okay. When they went to HBO, or not to HBO, but it was Yahoo.
It was Yahoo.
It was like the big, when Yahoo was trying to be a streaming service, and like that was
their big get. Yeah.
Yeah.
God damn, Community is so good, though.
It is. It really is.
Yeah, that is a show about how you deconstruct like storytelling mediums. Not Mank.
No.
Mank isn't good at that.
No.
Like, I see the attempt, but it's not done in an entertaining fashion.
The attempt was there. I think the problem with Mank was that it was trying way too hard to do that and also let you know that it was doing that.
Mm-hmm. It wanted to be too self-aware.
Yeah. Yeah.
I want you to look me in the eyes while I'm jerking myself off about this fucking film history.
Right? And you should
be arousing? It is not. Yeah. It isn't.
You should be completely aware of every part of this that gets me off.
Yeah. Look at how much fun I'm having with this. Isn't this fun? No.
Nope. Not even a little.
Yeah.
Not even a little.
I see you having fun.
But my pants are still on, so.
Yeah. I'm not interested in this.
Not even moderately chubbed up here.
Is Amanda Seyfried going to get naked? Oh! Nope, we got nothing. Nothing. Is Gary Oldman going to get naked? Nope, we got nothing.
But he is going to get drunk.
A lot.
Well, that was the only thing that I could relate to in the entire movie. Getting drunk, assaulting a dinner party, throwing up on the floor. That, you know...
You connected with?
Yeah, that I connected with viscerally. Well,
see, and I feel like they tease me with that too, because like this movie's kind of slow and boring. Oh, but yeah, you're staying in a dry county, but look at we've smuggled in all this booze. It's like, oh, okay, well, this is interesting.
No,
it wasn't.
No,
it wasn't interesting.
It wasn't.
No, in fact, that was like the one thing that was what they used to hand wave that, okay, he managed to finish in the last 2 weeks because he got his real booze. The end.
I didn't even know what the original bottles of booze were. Was that booze or what the hell was that?
It was supposed to be booze, but it was like laced with a powerful sedative. So he would drink it and immediately pass out.
Oh, well, that sucks.
Yeah, because how are you going to text people unaware if you've passed out?
God, I have a problem with that. Getting drunk and texting people, that is a problem.
You know, I can honestly say I don't think I've ever gotten texts from you drunk. Like, actively.
I've definitely seen Facebook posts from him drunk.
Yeah, yeah, I do that a lot, too.
Yep, yep.
Listen, I like to share my experiences with as many people as possible.
What I really enjoy lately, though, is that I'm unaware that you're Facebook posting about our Sunday game night. And I don't realize it until like Monday or Tuesday. And it's like, oh, shit. That's right. We did do that. Or I did say that.
I summoned my spectral barmaids.
Yeah, that was my quote.
I know. Then Luke had spectral barmaid miniature models.
Yeah, I think he had that just waiting.
Just queued up.
Yeah. Yep.
That does sound like him. That's like how I've got that when I was up at Sam's the last time. He was downstairs playing Magic. It was like a big house board game weekend he was doing. He was downstairs playing Magic or something. Well, we started going through some of his books upstairs. We found like his old high school yearbook.
Oh, no.
So I found. So I got a few pictures of Sam that I have got primed. I've been sitting on those for 2.5 years.
Oh, one of my favorite pictures of Sam is still the one that I took at Archon at Sausage Fest a year or two ago. Well, was it last year? It was the last Sausage Fest that he was at.
That'd have been 2018.
Yes, that sounds right. Yeah, the picture of Sam by itself is great because he's just making this weird, disgusted looking face, and just even out of context, the picture is perfect.
Yep.
In context, it's so much better. Because he's standing behind someone who's getting leered at by this guy. And it's like, oh. And I know that's probably not exactly what Sam was reacting to, but man, it tells a whole story.
Off center look, just into the middle distance to avoid.
Yeah.
Oh God, there's gonna be an Archon this year. Oof.
Yep.
Of some kind, presumably.
I'm going, Eric. I don't care.
I know you are.
I don't care if it kills me. I did my time. I infected no one.
Congratulations.
I know. I don't want to use the word hero. But
you'd be okay if somebody used it about you.
Yeah. I don't want to use it. I don't want to use it first.
Sure.
But you'd like to quote someone liberally.
Yeah, yeah.
That their use of it.
I got to trick one person into using it, and then I can quote it forever.
Better if they do it in print, because then it could be on your Wikipedia page.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, print would be good. Just add that to the menu. Oh, there you go. Screenshot of that real quick. Bam, got it.
What's really great about any screenshot you have of that, like, that quote is right under me.
I didn't take a screenshot of you.
Oh, well.
See, all you have to do is ask, you get what you want.
I know.
Yeah.
You just got to put that energy out into the universe, Eric. That's the key.
You don't make 100% of the shots that you don't take or whatever.
Yeah.
Whatever
you miss 100% of the shots that you don't take. Yep.
Well, I've been boring and low energy all week too, between having my life drained for the 24 hours after my shot and the pollen bukkake that is spring in the Midwest.
Oh my God, after you got that shot, did you just sleep for like 36 hours?
It was like, so right for about like 6 hours after, or, you know, 6 to 12 hours after it, I was fine. I was actually like, oh, no side effects, cool. And then it felt like every bit of energy was just drained out of my body. I didn't feel sick. I just had nothing.
Yeah, that that happened to me on the second shot, but it took like 36 hours. But like that 36-hour mark hit, and it was just like, I'm going to go sleep now. Like, I can just feel it, like, it just washed over me.
I will wake up when my body is done making antibodies.
Yep.
Yeah, well, my complicated situation was I got my shot on a Sunday morning, all right? So the Saturday before that, I stayed up till like 5 a.m. drinking.
Good life choices.
Went to bed, woke up, and I'm like, fuck, I gotta go get this vaccine. And I think I'm still drunk. So it was a tough morning. And then the hangover set in about the time that the vaccine set in. And I was like, oh, God, I feel terrible.
And finger, then I slept finger, for... Fingers crossed you don't get a blood clot, Art.
Yeah, I was going to say, Art, was that just the sleep? Was that just passing the blood clot?
I would assume yes. Oh, yeah. God, I assume he died in between saying that and then commenting. That's rough. But at least he died doing what he loved.
That's rough, buddy.
Listening to us talk.
I don't really have anything else to say.
I got squat, man. I've been trying to stretch out my nothing for as long as possible.
And yeah.
I feel like I'm not succeeding.
Well, it made it to the 1 hour marker, so yeah. There you go.
Yeah, just right in under the wire. Just thumbing it in.
Yeah, Art, I did see that also, that the blood clots have seemed to only been affecting women.
Yeah, but the good news is, if she's ever taken birth control, like, she's already dodged the bullet.
Those odds are way worse.
Yeah, it's like 1 in 1,000, and the Johnson & Johnson thing's like 1 in 1,000,000 or something like that. So,
probably okay.
Yeah, I saw those statistics where, like, the percentage chance of getting a blood clot from any of these other things, including COVID. I think COVID was like 165,000 of 1 million people who get COVID have blood clots.
Yeah, but also here's the thing. So I think it's a good thing they paused it. And I think it's a good thing they paused it, not for the medical reasons, but for the losing PR war with vaccines, right? Like,
I think this is going to be worse for that.
I don't, because I feel like the situation is like, yeah, there might be a problem. There probably isn't a problem, but we way overreacted and were proactive about checking to see if there was a problem.
Yeah,
but we haven't seen any of that with the other two widely available vaccines.
I could definitely see it going both ways. And I do feel like maybe their messaging still hasn't been as great as it should be. But yeah, I think you're more likely to be in the clear by having an overabundance of caution publicly versus people starting to spread rumors that, hey, people are dying of this vaccine and they just keep pumping it out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, there's enough people who won't get the vaccine for their reasons.
Well, and they, you know, they were never going to get it anyway. When we're,
no,
you know, those,
no,
the people who had their minds made up, it wasn't going to matter.
But hey, good news in the state that I live in is that people who are eligible for the vaccine, we're at 46% of people who are eligible for the vaccine have gotten the vaccine. That's people over the age of 16.
So like half of people over 16 in Illinois have gotten the vaccine.
Yeah, almost half.
Is that fully or just their first shot?
I don't know off the top of my head. I don't know.
Because I'm pretty sure we're at 16 and up now, too.
Well, that's open in Missouri. That as of last Saturday, actually.
Like now I think it's fairly easy to get it now in Missouri.
Oh yeah, I actually in the last week I've gotten like 4 different invitations to just, hey, bring your family and we'll inject you.
Yep.
Yeah, I've been getting so many emails and text messages about it, like that I've started opting out of the messaging, like, please stop emailing me. Get this to people who need it, because I don't anymore.
Yeah, there isn't, on the notifications I get, there isn't an opt-out like link to say, hey, I already got this, you can move on.
I've gotten unsubscribes in most of the notifications I've been getting. And honestly, I mean, it's my own fault, I suppose, because I was psychotic in pre-registering as many different places as I could find.
Yep. Oh, I did too. Yep.
Get that shit in me.
Living in one state, working in another, man, I crossed. I was everything.
Oh, wow, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I, you know, because I work in Missouri, I'm eligible. Like, and after I got my shot, because the Garden is a public institution, they actually worked with the city. And for a while there, we were in talks to be a vaccination site.
Jabby jabby.
Yep. It turns out it was all that went to Forest Park, but like Garden employees were invited to come out to the Garden to the Forest Park vaccination site to get to like get bumped up in line for that as people who are public, who serve the public as a public service interest group thing. I don't know. I had already gotten my shot by then.
I cannot wait till this is so widely whatever. I haven't been to a restaurant in actually 2 weeks. Oh. Never mind.
I haven't been inside a restaurant in over a year now. And yeah, and I was thinking about it actually driving on the way home yesterday, you know, haven't been to a theater. I've been to a restaurant. I haven't been in anywhere public really. Right. In over a year now. And I was like, God, I'm not even going to remember how to do that kind of thing. Like it's just going to be weird for a while.
We decided we were going to go out to dinner tonight and, it was just the three of us because Holden's like in the run up to his play. So he's like he's late every night. And we walked into a local bar and grill place and it's a sports bar kind of atmosphere. So it was really loud, like what you would expect normally for a place like that. It kind of freaked Aaron out. Like she wasn't used to that much input. Yeah, it was like she put her hands over her head and kind of put her head down. It was like, we're leaving, let's go. And like she got real upset that, you know, I don't want to upset you guys that, you know, you wanted to go. Look,
yeah,
it's not worth without it
for
it's,
14 months
it's fine. It's okay. It's not a big deal. This is it was jumping into the deep end of the pool.
Yeah, there's going to be a reintegration process.
So we went someplace that, you know, we went to Bandanas, which it's a lot more separated. It's a lot more quiet. It's a place, the bar and grill, we'd never been there before. It was a first time place for us because it was a local place, but it's like, we've been to Bandanas plenty of times, not in over a year. But so yeah. It was like, okay, this is a better environment to start the reintegration.
Yeah. Damn, Tony. Now I want a bowl of brine peanuts.
Yeah.
I went to the I don't know if you've been down to Cherokee and that taco and ice cream place where it's like this big open. It's not a street. It's not open to the street, but it's open to the street. So it's like kind of outside-y, but kind of inside-y. So I went there to eat and it's just like, oh God, there's just people everywhere. People everywhere.
Yeah.
Ugh. What are all these people doing around me?
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, it's weird. I still get a little bit twitchy watching TV shows where people are like hugging and in large groups of people, and it's like, this is a 3-year-old TV show. I should not be getting worked up about this. They were safe. This was okay at the time.
It's gonna be okay again. That's gonna be part of the problem, man.
Yeah.
I've got some friends who, if I don't drag them back into society, they're just not gonna, like, this is just gonna be their new life.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like it's okay.
Look, we proved that we could do this. It was, we have the infrastructure to never see humans again.
But don't do that.
No,
like, no. You can't not do that.
Yeah. Yep.
Can't not see people. God, it's so close, Tony. I can taste it.
Just a few short weeks away. And
yeah.
We got a party scheduled for the exact date.
Yeah, the day before my second shot. So sucks to be me.
Yeah, you'll only be.
I'll do it again in 2 weeks.
You'll only have, what, like 85% efficacy at that point, Eric, because you got Pfizer.
Yeah. I that's the thing. Like, I have in many cases, I think, taken an overabundance of caution, mm-hmm. but I'm fine with that. And especially now, like, how dumb would it be to catch it now?
No, I'm right there with you. Yeah, once we were getting down to the last couple of weeks, it was like, look, we're this close to the end. You will not fuck this up for.
Yeah, let's just shut it down for another 2 to 3 weeks and we are done.
Yep. Like Aaron figured out that Good Friday was 2 weeks after our second shot, which with Pfizer, like at the time we got our first shot, it was, you still needed 2 weeks after Pfizer. Now they've said it's only a week after and you're good. She had figured out, all right, then you guys are good. That means I can have a sleepover, but that's Easter weekend. So like that's when I said we had a sleepover, she had a sleepover just a couple of days ago. She knew she couldn't have it Easter weekend because it's Easter weekend. There was other things going on. And so it was like the Saturday after that. So that's what it was. She's been planning this. She had been planning this sleepover for over a month.
Dedication.
Yeah. She baked things for it. Like,
hell yeah. Oh, I noticed I didn't get an invite. I was real cautious most of the year, but post-vaccine with other people who are vaccinated, I've become real
reckless.
I've become much less cautious.
Yeah.
I've got my shot. Everybody else has got their shots. It'll be fine. I'm not super worried about it.
Yeah. Well, yeah. At that point, the there's basically no risk of severe anything, really, from what they've said. Like, even if somehow someone was carrying it and somebody else caught it, it would be like a cold.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Our only risk right now is that Erin is under 16, so she can't get vaccinated yet. But the way things are going, like, it's definitely going to be by the time all the timelines say she will have it by the time she goes back to school in the fall, which means she'll probably be fully vaccinated like before we go to the lake trip, that kind of thing. So,
and I gotta say, I am thrilled with, even given how the infrastructure of some of the states has been so terrible still, I've been thrilled with how it's actually rolling out ahead of schedule pretty much across the board. Because I remember when, like, you know, when the election happened in November, and almost immediately there was, you know, stuff started kind of ramping up, looking a little bit better. There was a lot of doom and gloom saying, oh, yeah, you think it's going to be better, but it's still going to be a year before we get any, you know.
Yep.
It's like, no, we're looking good.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm really glad that they said that. You know, I'm glad that they gave us those year timelines, because then it was like, oh, well, maybe by the end of summer, by midsummer, like the timeline just kept moving forward. It got real exciting.
Yeah. The whole Biden's like 100 million in 100 days. And then midway through, he's like, we got to change that to 200 million in 100 days because we've already done it. Yeah, we've already done it. So,
yeah, it's nice to actually have the goalpost shift in a nice direction as opposed to a bad one.
Yeah. So I pulled up the statewide metrics for Illinois because Illinois has got, so we had a 5-phase reopening plan. Phase five being life's back to normal. You know, that's kind of been our benchmarks. Right now, Illinois is in phase four. Well, once the vaccine started coming out, they said, we're going to need one more, what they're calling the bridge phase. And the criteria for that is, as long as the hospitalization numbers are trending downward and 70% of people over the age of 65 were vaccinated, then we're going to be in the bridge phase. Right now, we're at almost 76% of the people over 65 are vaccinated. The problem is hospitalizations are still going up. Like, people are getting vaccinated and being stupid. I mean, it's clearly what's happening. Like,
right here, Tony.
Right?
God damn.
The percentage of people 16 and up in Illinois is 46.49%. The average available and staffed ICU beds is trending downward nicely. Just a couple of weeks ago, it was like 27, 28%. As of today, it's at 23%. So I think they said in St. Clair County, where I'm at, there were no people on ventilators as of this past weekend. So these are all fantastic things.
Yeah, I think the biggest problem that's been happening lately is just in some of the states where the rollout isn't happening as quickly as other places, people are acting like it's a done deal already.
Right. Right. Well, it's still surprising to me, like, because I've been fully vaccinated now for weeks at this point. So it's still surprising to me that I'm seeing people who are just now getting their first shot. Like, it's the disparity between states is obvious. And then disparity between regions in states is really obvious too.
According to the COVID vaccine dashboard for Missouri, 1/3 of our residents have had at least one shot, and 21% have finished.
Yeah, and I think our governor has actually bragged about those numbers. Those are not great numbers, but oh well.
Yeah, well, it also has a nice location breakdown of vaccination percentages, and you can very clearly see where black people live. We don't have vaccinations, so.
Yep.
Superb. Well,
there's also the problem of getting black people to get vaccinated, too.
Yeah, I don't actually think that's a thing.
It is for some.
My black community source is like, no black community member is thinking that. We just think it's a method that the media is using to justify the poor rollout of vaccines in black areas.
It could be, but I know of black people that will not get it until a lot more people get it. Like, they are on purpose waiting.
I imagine, just like in any community, there is a certain amount of. There's a certain percentage of that, and I don't know what the really relative rates are, and it's probably regional based too, in a state and across states. But I absolutely 100% believe, at least in Missouri, that in the urban regions, that black communities are getting fewer per capita shipments of vaccines.
Yes, they are. So, but then again, I also have relatives of mine. Now, they're white. They live in Texas. But I have relatives of mine that were like, oh, we're just going to wait for the Johnson & Johnson shot because it's just one and done. And when my parents were telling me this, I said, you know, that's just an excuse, right? Well, I said, I think this is just their delaying tactic. Well, Johnson & Johnson shot was out and has been readily available. They still aren't getting their shots. Yeah, well, we're gonna hold. We're not. Well, this was before all that. They were like, we're not. Yeah, you know what? We live with this for a year. We're doing all right. We'll just stay like this until we've reached herd immunity. Then we'll be all right to go out. No, this is you've been listening to too much Fox and OAN is what this is.
Yeah. Because what you think herd immunity means is not actually
is not what that means.
It's not what that means.
Texas, 45th in the nation. WTF. Come on, Art, you need to bring your people along.
I mean, everyone down there can just fly to Cancun instead, right? That's how that works.
States ranked by percentage of COVID vaccines administered. Let's see, 45th. All right, I don't know what you're talking about. I see Texas at 30. I see Missouri at 35. Who's the worst? Who wants to take a guess who the worst is?
Oh, this is actually, I love games like this. Okay.
Oh, I'm going to go with.
No, this is per capita, like percentage vaccination, basically.
Percentage?
Percentage of distributed vaccines that have been administered.
Ooh, I'm going to try Montana.
That's not a bad one. I'm going to say South Dakota.
What? That's interesting. Why would you guys go with the lowest population states?
Because they don't have large population centers. So
they wouldn't have been necessarily priorities for getting the vaccine. Plus, I know South Dakota at least has a state government that would call vaccination rollouts a socialist plot. So.
Right. Well, so given what you've said, I'm going to change mine to, Louisiana. There's a lot of black people in Louisiana.
One thing to note here, this list I was just looking at, percentage of distributed vaccines that have been administered. That's the ranking they're going by.
Oh, wait. That's weird.
I'm finding a different map. Don't worry. I'm finding a different map.
Yeah, that's an unusual metric to go by.
Yes, to me, the best metric, if you're just talking about how good is a state doing, is what percentage of the population has started receiving their vaccinations.
Okay.
Yeah, right. And so because that, while you're looking that up, because the question came up, I did look up, and the Illinois numbers that I was quoting, the percentages of people who are vaccinated, that's at least one vaccination.
Sure. Okay, here we go. Percent of people given at least one shot versus, and like I've got that percent of people given at least one shot. All right, we'll ignore the doses used and distribution, whatever. All right, who do you think is last of the 50 states? Because you know the Virgin Islands, Puerto Rico, the Marshall Islands, and Micronesia are all lower than those.
Right.
Well, I mean, I still like my South Dakota choice, but that Louisiana pick actually is tasty.
Mississippi might be pretty good too.
Yeah, I'm going to stick with my original gut check and say South Dakota and see where I fall.
South Dakota is ninth.
All right, completely off base then.
All you need is one good population center to get most of their people, and that's
true. Yeah. You go that's the entire one state.
Yeah, you go to one Purdue chicken plant. And you've got most of the state.
Or in Wyoming, you find whoever's camping in the state that week, and you're at 100%. Uh-huh. All right. Well, which guess are you going to actually lock in here, Tony?
Let me go with Mississippi.
Ooh, Mississippi. Mississippi is 50.
Oh, really?
According to the New York Times.
Wow.
Well done, sir.
I'm not looking anything up. I was not cheating.
This is data as of today, the New York Times claims. Okay. Louisiana is 48. It might surprise you to know that Mississippi, Alabama, Louisiana, Tennessee, and Georgia make up 5 of the 6 lowest.
No, it doesn't. Not even a little.
Who's the outlier of the 6 lowest?
Idaho?
Well, it's a low population state where apparently not even the population center got it.
Right.
Missouri is like 40th.
Woohoo.
Illinois is I don't know, in the 20s it looks like. They don't have numbers on these, so it's kind of hard to count them. I don't know what Palau is, but apparently that's in it's an archipelago of over 500 islands, part of the Micronesia region of the Western Pacific Ocean, which apparently is on the U.S. map. So is this a U.S. territory? Oh, yeah, it is. Along with other Pacific Islands, Palau was made part of the United States Governed Trust Territory of the Pacific Islands in 1947. Politically, Palau is a presidential republic in free association with the United States, which provides defense, funding, and access to social services.
Go World War II.
Yeah. Got a lot of land in World War II for some reason. All right.
Well, we have to protect it from the commies.
Yeah. Pretty stark divide politically between the top half of this list and the bottom half of this list.
Weirdly,
as you might expect.
All right.
Yeah. I've got some Factorio I want to play.
Yep.
Important business, sure.
Ooh, do you want to take a guess who has the highest percentage of fully vaccinated people? The number is 31%.
Wow.
Fully vaccinated.
So here's the thing.
Wow.
I see this as going one of two ways. Either it's like a very blue state where they've been on top of this from the get-go, like a New York's. Well, actually, the thing is, rural New York is actually
I think
red,
we're looking even smaller. Or, I think we're looking at a really small blue state, like a Dover, or Delaware.
Dover. That is not a state.
No, I used to live in Dover, Delaware.
I've been there.
Yeah. My dad was stationed at Dover Air Force Base in Delaware.
Or if one of those huge unpopulated states that happens to have actually had a really good vaccine rollout, because it doesn't take much.
Like Alaska.
Yeah.
But they're so Nobody even gets within 30 feet of each other there. So
I'm actually gonna guess Massachusetts.
I'm gonna go with Connecticut.
Connecticut is number 5.
Ooh, close.
Massachusetts is number 10.
Oh.
The state with the highest percentage of fully vaccinated as of today at 31% is Alaska.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
That's a red state, though.
I know. That's why I didn't go with that, because it is a red state.
It's a red state, but it's a weird red state. Like, they're... You know how a lot of Republicans like talking about how, well, I just like, you know, self-responsibility and all that, herba-jerba. I feel like Alaska actually lives that a little more than your average Republican state.
I feel like Alaska's a more libertarian state, but they side with the Republicans just because it's an actual party.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's interesting. But yeah, so low population that had a decent rollout.
Yeah.
I mean, probably easier to keep the vaccines cold there.
Fair.
That means nothing right now. It's probably springtime there, too.
Yeah.
No, it's always 20 below zero there because it's Alaska.
I don't think that's true.
That's geography.
I did fail that in high school.
Well established. Your grades in geography.
Yeah. Okay. Better. We actually better cut this off before I start talking about the muon discoveries in particle physics that have been going on over the last week or two.
Yeah, I can't. Do
that. All right. We'll see you guys next week.
I don't have that in me. I do not have that in me.
Next week we'll be talking about Promising Young Woman.
Exciting.
Called me in high school.
You know what? Let's also talk about what any Oscar predictions we might have based on what we've seen from those movies and from the actors and such and whatnot.
All right, I can do that.
All right. Yep.
I'll work up a whole complicated sheet.
Perfect. We'll do scoring. There'll be points.
I can't do any of that either.
But they'll all be made up.
Yeah. Everything's made up.
All right. We'll see you guys.
See you.
Good night.